was after lights out that some of the most hysterical moments occurred. Those who had been drinking heavily soon made it known by their great asphyxiating postern blasts that cleared the beds all around for as far as 100 feet. There were even more gentlemen who performed feats with their unwanted netherwinds that not even the great Petermen could have eclipsed. Simply, they set fire to them. The artiste would bend down, and his assistant stood by with a lighted match. When the artiste let off, he ignited it. Using this method, I have seen sheets of blue flame up to 3 feet in length. There was a certain signaler X whose control of the anal sphincter allowed him to pass Morse code messages. With my own ears, I heard him send, "Hello, dear mother." This crude military life was terrible for our Jehovah Witness. Poor Bombardier MacDonald, through all the vulgarity, letting off and blasphemy, his voice would come out of the darkness.
I tell you all, repent. The day of judgment is at hand. Armageddon is nigh. Only they that believe will be saved.
Be so.
Bullocks.
Mock you now, but hear me. When Jehovah cometh, you will stand to be judged.
Bullocks.
Be so. Every weekend, we'd find his pamphlets on our beds.
And a terrible end they came to.
But the pressure was too much, and gradually, MacDonald started to drink and swear.
I tell you, the bloody day is at hand.
Indeed, it was. The end of the holy man was nigh. One night, it came to pass that Gunner James Devine was on midnight guard when he was awakened by a rhythmic thumping from the back of a coal shed. Investigation showed the bombardier with his trousers round his ankles having a late-night knee trembler with the local fat girl. The noise was her nut thumping against the partition. Gunner Devine watched until the climax was nigh, and then... Halt! Who comes there? MacDonald ran into the night screaming,
"Armageddon! Armageddon! And surely the witch will have had
you!" The girl, still in a sexual coma, was given Gunner Devine's rifle to hold while he terminated her contract. Truly, they also serve who stand and wait. Amen. During the 1941, the sole stratagem of the army in England was one of continual movement. The moves were always highly secretive and came in highly sealed envelopes, the contents of which usually appeared in later editions of the Bexhill Observer. Secrecy was impossible. Enemy agents only had to follow the trail of illegitimate births. News came that we were to be billeted in Turkey Road Girls' School. It was a pity because the girls had left. But it was for us a paradise. Large clean rooms, parquet floors, large ballroom showers, and a brand new upright piano on which Harry could play that bloody awful Warsaw Concerto. From here, we ran our own dances. It was that or the flicks, and flicks cost money. There was a lovely busty bird called Beryl who had hot pants for me. She used to keep them in the oven. During the interval of our first dance at Turkey Road, I took her to the lorry park, into the back of a 15-hundred-weight truck. We were going through our third encore when the truck drove off.
Yeah. Oh, Mary, this is train.
Through the flap, I saw our chauffeur was Sergeant Boner, Big Balls Hughes. The weight of my guts. I don't know why, I'd never show them to him. It stopped at Hastings. He left the truck up an alley, and he went into the White Lion for a drink. Slipping into the driving seat, I drove it back, four, that is, and I arrived in time to play the second half of the dance, where Edgerton was sweating at the piano.
Where the bloody hell have you been?
Hi, Harry. I've been having it off in the back of the lorry, and I got carried away. And by the way... One Sunday morning, while we Roman Catholic gunners were at our devotions, pontoon, suddenly Bombardier Bassett entered.
Bert, hey, mate. Jenny, you ain't having where you been. All I want you to do, you get up with a full kit. About how many outtakes I'll have here and explain for you. Got how many full episodes. Now then, get your kit on that fucking truck.
Come on, lads, let's get our kit on that fucking truck, eh?
This could be promotion for you.
An hour later, we were dumped into the dung-filled yard of a requisitioned livery stable. Under those conditions, I'd have been livery too, folks. It was sort of a dog breeder's kennels at the junction of the Hailsham Eastbourne Road. The place, Robin's Post, Hailsham, Sussex. The signal section was a law unto itself. We organised the duty roster to suit ourselves. We opted for 1 week's duty on and one off. It was all right having a whole week off, but it became boring. So a sleeping contest was inaugurated. The rules were...
The contestant will at no time leave the bed. The first to do so is disqualified.
So, Piddles were done out the back window at night, standing on a bed. Food was hauled up in a kit bag when the nappy was called. And the contestants were Gunners Milligan, Edgerton, White, Devine and Files. There we lay for 5 days and nights, telling jokes, recounting the past, and whistling the Warsaw Concerto.
Here, you know what I like to do, Pomeroy Jones?
What?
Tie the post, then shoot him with a blunderbuss over his own shirt.
When I leave the army, I'm not going to do anything for a year.
You know what I'd like now? Raw fried eggs, chips, bacon, tomatoes, and daddy's sauce.
Ah, too many eggs give you a deal.
I think this war will deute.
Well, what do you mean deute, you Scotch git?
No, stop. You know, I mean, everyone will get fed up. I'm fed up already.
So am I. Let's all fuck off.
Yeah, so, look here, lend us a fag.
You always scrounging fucking fags. What'd you do with them?
Oh, smoke them.
Edgerton won the contest with 6 days, 7 hours, and a bed full of it. About now, the owner of the livery stables gave a dance for the livery officers from local British and Canadian units. We were detailed to play. The dance was held in a large and uncomfortable country-style lounge. Soon the floor was crowded, and drinks for the band were arriving at a steady rate. Without warning, the Canadian officer poured beer into the bell of my saxophone, which he thought was funny. I threw the contents over his jacket, something he didn't think was funny. He grabbed the saxophone. Let go, I said. This is a solo instrument. Our host rushed over. The Canadian was told...
It's not the done thing, Maple Leaf Chappie.
The dance continued, and we played a Scottish reel. At once the floor became a mass of bleating tin twits. One of the batmen, serving drinks, had his train knocked flying all over Mrs. Hendricks.
Oh, no!
Captain Hendricks hit someone.
Oh!
Someone else hit him.
Oh! But somebody stop them!
Shrieked Mrs. Hendricks as someone floored her. Our host rushed up.
For God's sake, can you play the Maple Leaf forever?
No, sir. We have to stop for meals. We launched into God Save the King. Everyone else had to save themselves. Someone hit Major Tater Jack MCDSO. His batman laid out the offender.
Oh!
To help him all along, Doug Kitchell threw an occasional cream cake into the arena. A red-faced major, his bald head supporting a chocolate eclair, hit the Canadian sporting a jam caliphate ear.
Ah!
Kitchell's masterpiece, a large circular cream-topped cake that stuck to the back of an officer's head. A right cross felled him.
Oh!
The cake was picked up by a foot which spotted all over her chest and passed it onto her neck. In a short time, cream, jam and treacle were liberally distributed on the uniforms of Her Majesty's officers. Strawberry flan up the front of the jacket, apple strudel in the lower place, plus little blobs of cream on the epaulets was something we found difficult to salute. Someone covered in lemon curd was hit backwards through a window.
Ah!
Our host, his head stripped open, suddenly appeared cross-eyed and smiling above the mass.
Hello, Molly.
He said and disappeared. Major Chittadak, MTPSO, had recovered enough to stand up again and was rendered unconscious for the second time.
Oh!
Batman pulled him from the carnage. There seemed no sign of the fight abating, so we left walking over a carpet of unconscious officers. It's not too difficult to become a military criminal. Not shaving, dirty boots, calling a sergeant darling, and selling your brand carrier or auctioning the regiment. Any Sunday down Petticoat Lane, you could find some of the lads selling lorries, jerry cans, bullets, webbings.
Get your lovely anti-aircraft guns here. Mines, lovely anti-personnel mines. Cripple the mother-in-law for lying.
It got so that military depots were shopping there for supplies. Often London-based regiments sent their quarter blokes for a gross of 3-inch mortars and a dozen bananas. It was common knowledge that Caledonian Road Market was a German supply depot. The true story behind Hess.
I flying here for the cut-price black market underwear for the SS, but on the arrival, I'm chickening up because Churchill is telling me the price.
An easy way to get jankers was not saluting the commission rank.
You are not saluting the officer. You are saluting the king's uniform.
Batman Stover took this as gospel. At Reveille, he would wake Lieutenant Budden with a cup of tea, turn, face Budden's uniform hanging on the wall, and salute it.
There's no need to take it that far, Stover.
I can't help it, sir. I come from a military family. If I did not salute the uniform, I feel that I was living the lie, sir.
But when no one's looking, there's no point.
Begging your pardon, sir. But there is. Many a time when I'm alone, cleaning your billet and scraping your underpants, when I finish, I face your best battle dress, I salute it. No one sees me, but deep down here, I know, on my honour, I'm alone with tradition.
How long have you been in the army, Stover?
49 years, sir.
Very good.
It's very good, sir. It's very, very good. will you be using the Zambra tonight, sir?
In the October, the 1942, we were alerted for a practice shoot. I decided to hide my rifle. I didn't want to frighten it. I hid it in the rafters of the hayloft.
That's a good idea,
said patriotic Edgington. The short of it was that several other patriots did the same.
And it came to pass that after they had gone thence, there cometh a quarter bloke, and in the goodness of his heart he did inspect the hayloft, and woe, he findeth rifles, and was sore distressed. Whereupon he reported them to the Major, who on September the 14th, 1942, gave them 14 bloody days detention.
For some reason, all other criminals were sent to RHQ at Cookville, but I was sent to Preston Barracks, Brighton, alone, no escort.
Ah, they trusted me, folks.
Welcome to Preston Barracks.
You're welcome to it, too.
Now, from now on, you keep your mouth shut and your barrels open.
The sergeant stripped me of all kit, leaving essentials like my body, the cell. My God, 7 foot by 6 foot by 20 foot high. They were expecting giants. A stone floor, small window, one iron bar, wooden bed, no light.
You go to sleep when it gets dark. Like all the good little baddies do. Now then, I stand on the officer.
Whatever you want.
No, sir, I haven't got a Bentley. He pointed to a photo of my girl by the bed.
That will have to go.
Yes, sir. Where would you like it to go? It would look nice on the piano.
Put it out of sight.
But it's my fiancée, sir.
Photographs are not allowed.
Statues, sir?
Sergeant, I'm afraid we'll have to put this man under arrest.
He's already under arrest, sir.
We'll give him extra fatigues for being alive.
This was being alive? The next time he visited me, I cut a small lock of my hair, tied a small bow on it, and placed it on my bed.
What's that?
It's a lock of hair, sir.
Well, throw it away.
Can't I keep the lock and just throw the key away? The officer never visited me again. He was drafted overseas as being insane and killed doing an air raid in Tobruk. Apparently he was hiding under a table and nothing tear and fell on his head. After 14 days, I was sent back to Hailsham. I arrived to find the whole battery boarding lorries. Oh, here, Sarge, where are we going?
I don't know. It's another seeker's estimation.
Sarge, I tell you what, they're moving us about to make us look a lot.
Yeah, well, we look a lot. A lot of cunts.
Yeah, well, come on, give us a merry song, Sarge.
Oh, I love you, son, when I hear that waltz on country.
It's nice to hear when you are near.